began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. David Blair, Enzo Tamanini and Callum Stewart back to celebrate the beginning of the Callum Davidson era, getting off to the best possible start, a 2-1 win away to Raith Rovers in the Scottish Championship. We will of course go back through that game, got a couple of other results for associated teams at Queen's Park to talk about as well. We'll recap the AGM and a little bit of news that came from that. Transfer rumours, we obviously had a new signing coming in and making an instant impact in that game in Kirkcaldy. And there's another rumour still kicking about, we'll have a look at that as well. And we will of course preview the Dunfermline game, even though it seems like there's a good chance that one may not go ahead. Plenty to talk about, but Callum and Enzo, first things first, how are you both doing?
I am buzzing. I mean, I've also severely loaded with the man flu, but that's not even got my spirits down after that game. I mean, Enzo and I were discussing this on the bus into the game. I was like, what would be better, going out and winning 4 or 5-0 or like a sort of narrow come from behind victory? And I think I concluded that I wouldn't mind the sort of win by a goal after being down, because it's the maximum drama, and that's exactly what happened. So yes, good day out.
A very good day out, and it's a weird one because actually we were talking the night before the game, and I think I said to you, because I was feeling really confident about this game. I just felt as though we had a new manager coming in, having come off the back of our first win in ages, and their manager having got the manager of the month, so there's always that we cursed there. It just felt as though everything was lined up for us to go there and get a win. And I said to you the night before the game, I haven't even contemplated the idea that we could go there and potentially lose this football game. And then within a few minutes, I'm thinking, oh no, it's happening again. But luckily, that's an even better way to win a game, isn't it? It's just so much more satisfying. And I just feel really good about the football right now and about the club. And I think we're really going to kick on. And it's an exciting time.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's an excellent way to win a game of football, especially given, you know, what we've kind of been subjected to for the first half of this season, not only to come from behind and get the win, but I'm sure, as we'll talk about, just the way that we kind of managed the game a fair bit better than we have done recently as well. Just that little bit of kind of street smarts that was maybe missing before certainly helped with that little bit extra experience in the squad. Let's get right into the game. Let's start by looking at the starting lineup, which, as we say, did include one new face. There was also another change from the previous week as well. We had Callum Ferry starting in goals. You guys can actually tell me what the exact lineup was, but as I'm looking at it, it was Tommy Robson on the left, Zach Mocken on the right, we've got Alex Bannon, and who else was it? Jack Thompson at centre half. You had debutant John Welsh having been announced by Queen's Park on Saturday morning, I'm sure it was, wasn't it? The tweet went out, although he was technically announced by Michael Stewart on BBC Scotland on the Friday night, which was nice of him to basically confirm that signing there. So yeah, as I say, we had Sean Welsh with Turner, and was it Longridge playing centre mid as well, with Cammy Bruce on the left, Dom Thomas on the right, and Rory Payton up front. So was it a 4-3-3? How did the players kind of move around and change? Because a lot of it was said on social media and on like Pye and Bovril before from a lot of St Johnson fans saying that, you know, Callum Davidson will stick to this 3 or 5 at the back formation. How did it look like we lined up to begin with?
It was more of that 5 at the back, with Mocken and Bruce being the sort of wing backs. So it was a similar setup to what Knighton had played the week before, except the main change that he'd made was bringing in Welsh, which I thought was like, I mean, talk about a big decision for your first for your first game, because I think if there's a very small group of players in this squad who I wouldn't say are undroppable, but would certainly be near the bottom of your list of players that are going to get dropped, and Jack Spong's probably one of them. So I was kind of surprised that if there was going to be changes in the middle of the park that it was going to be Spong that was dropped. But I mean, you just can't complain with that result and performance, and you've seen throughout the game. I mean, what a debut from Welsh as well, to go and get the goal. But sticking to the lineups just now, I thought that was a very big call. So you had Welsh and Turner alongside sort of Thomas and Longridge, who are playing those sort of forward winger roles that we see them just playing off of Payton. And it was, as I mentioned, Bannon and Morkan and Bruce in the wing back positions. And Jack Thompson again playing out of centre back again, and he just kind of looks better and better there each week.
Yeah, and also, so while it is true that obviously Callum Davison historically has a bit of a reputation for sticking with that sort of formation, as you touched on, Callum, Naughton has been playing that for a couple of weeks anyway, so it's not as though he's come in and changed up a team that had won before that. He's come in, yes, he's made some changes to the actual players, but ultimately he's come in and kept the shape that got us our first win in however long it was against Dunfermline last week. So I don't think it's necessarily him coming in and immediately being stubborn and forcing a system onto the team. We've seen improvements with that shape anyway over the past few weeks. So, it was all about, as you say, the players that he put in the park, and ultimately dropping Jack Spong was a big one. But I don't know if he's noticed in his post-match interview, he did mention that he wanted to see how certain players reacted to being on the bench, and I have a feeling he was maybe referring to Jack Spong. I'm not sure what the reason for that was, but didn't get the impression that he was in a huff or anything like that. So hopefully he got the reaction that he was looking for there.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I quite like about this formation is, see, with having Mocken and Bruce, obviously we've seen the benefits of Bruce, and we'll obviously touch on his contribution to the game. But see, having those two wing back instead of your sort of classic fullback positions when they're part of a back four, I just think it gives them a wee bit of breathing room, because clearly both of these guys are very, very good going forward. But having the extra cover of Robson and Bannon either side, and then you've still got Thompson sitting in the middle, I just think it works a lot better for these young guys that are naturally very good at attacking, but perhaps need a bit more support on the defensive side of the game. So I can't see him changing that for the next couple of weeks anyway, because it looks to be the start of a system which is going to be a wee bit more attritional for us and help us grind out results compared to what we've seen previously, I think.
There's no need to change it. I mean, that's the thing. I get that obviously he's just come in and he's going to be learning a lot about the players still. He's going to only have had a handful of training sessions under his belt at the end of the day. But I feel as though the shape does suit us, and I think it seems to. I think it matches up well against a lot of the other teams in this division as well, which is obviously a really, really important thing. The key thing is obviously the personnel that are going to be involved, and I'm fully expecting another couple of signings between now and obviously the end of the month. But we'll see. We'll see what happens this weekend. I could see him just sticking with the same lineup against Dunfermline if the game goes ahead, which obviously we're very doubtful about.
Yeah, I was clearly giving Cammy Bruce a little bit too much credit, perhaps, for the starting position then, especially given his goal. I was instantly assuming that he was perhaps playing left wing. So that's interesting that we did stick with this. We'll need to agree, is it a 3-5-2? I'll just start saying 3-5-2 instead of saying both formations every single time. I will just accept that's what it is. So, obviously, the game didn't get off to a brilliant start. Wraith Rovers obviously took the lead 3 minutes in with Dylan Easton getting the ball out wide. He cut back inside Zach Mocken and whipped a shot or a cross. Like, you generally can't really tell which one it is, but it doesn't really particularly matter because Jack Hamilton stays on his toes, stays alive to the ball coming across, and with everybody expecting the ball to either go past the far post or perhaps maybe into Callum Ferry's arms, he jukes in and makes sure he redirects the ball the other way into the back of the net. So obviously, yeah, a nightmare start for Callum Davison, and I recall hearing his post-match interview on the radio on Saturday evening, and he said it was as much, but Queen's Park obviously battled back. It was you guys can obviously tell us a little bit more how the half went in general being at the game, but I want to just round off the first half first and talk about Cammy Bruce's goal. A fantastic goal, his first senior goal, made it 1-1 on the day. The ball played across by Longridge to Tommy Robson, and you can see on the highlights instantly, as soon as Tommy Robson gets that, Cammy Bruce is out wide and he makes that run across, like behind his the right back. Was that Gullen, was it, that was filling in there? Wraith Rovers had a few injuries, so I think it was a makeshift right back, whoever it was anyway.
Mullen, was it not?
Was it Mullen? Gullen? No, I don't know what the name was.
Yeah. Like fish.
Whoever it was, some idiot anyway. Completely outfoxed by Bruce's run. Also completely outfoxed by a fantastic first touch with his left foot to control the ball and drop it right into his path. And then outfoxed by his second touch, which was with his, we were led to believe, his weaker right foot, curling it round the goalkeeper into the far corner. Izzy, an absolutely fantastic goal. A great moment for him. A great moment for, again, I believe it may have been his aunt that was on Facebook that posted that she had the coupon on for him to score any time at some pretty tasty odds. I'm sure it was turned something like £400. So well done to her. Well done to Cammy Bruce. And yeah, a fantastic end to the first half for Queen's Park, because it was just a couple minutes before the halftime whistle. So as I say, Calum, come to you first. Talks that first 45 under Calum Davidson, as I say, started poorly, ended fantastically.
It did, yeah, it did. I was, I just felt doomed after the first few minutes. Like, we were all standing there, and there was obviously a new manager. We won the week before. There was I don't know if it's an air of confidence, but an air of hope was probably a better term for it. And to concede that goal, it was very, very disappointing. And I just thought that it was going to be another one of those days, if I'm frank. But it was different, and you could see the guys coming back into it. I think Ray certainly had the better chances in the first half, and I think the goal that we scored was against a run of play. But if we're just talking about the first half specifically, I just think that the way in which we started to attack was just giving us a lot more opportunities than what we had when we were playing our previous system, because there was so much less of the slow build-up play. It was a lot more direct. And when I say direct, it wasn't long ball. It was like
getting the ball
up. Yeah, it was getting the ball up the pitch quickly. And do you know what that just allowed for? It just reduces the amount of mad errors that we've seen. How many times did we talk about conceding goals due to unforced errors, guys dilly-dallying on the ball, getting tackled, etc.? And we know that that was meant to be part of the game plan, like get the players to press you and then play around it. But we know, and how often have we said this over the course of the season, that any team that pressed us would end up winning the game because we would invariably make a mistake. And as soon as Wraith pressed us, we just started to get the ball up the pitch quicker, and then that broke the press, which allowed for it. So that was really, really refreshing. And it seemed to give a bit of a lease of life to Peyton up front as well, because it felt like suddenly he had a lot more opportunities to get involved in the game rather than it being just at his feet all the time where he's back to goal or him having to come deep for it. There's a lot more opportunities for him to get on the ball further up the pitch. And we were trying to play guys beyond the back line. Instead of us doing sort of passing horizontally, looking for these wee niche pockets of space, it was get guys through the lines, hit the byline, try and get across something from that. And that's essentially what we've seen from Bruce's goal. It was absolutely fantastic. The run from Bruce, I mean, Robson looked as if he knew that was going to happen, so I'm going to credit that one in a training ground move, but it was a fantastic pass from Robson. Great collection from Bruce and a really, really tidy finish. And it was really good to see I've seen the clips that you referred to there, David, of his family celebrating and stuff like that. So that was nice as well. But I would say on the whole, the first half for me was still a wee bit against the run of play. And regardless of us obviously coming away with the win, Callum Ferry, yet again, how many times do we need to say this? Absolute hero. Like the saves that he's made in that game were tremendous. Two standout ones from the free kick and the save down at his right-hand corner, which were absolutely fantastic. But one of the best things from that whole game for me in terms of Callum Ferry's performance was essentially his shithousery throughout the remaining period of the game. Like you said, street smarts at the start of this, David, and it was so nice to see us doing some of the stuff that we see teams execute against us. It was falling all over the place. He was a lot more commanding in his box as well. I felt he was jumping on top of Wraith players. He just kind of looked a bit fiery, and it worked really, really well. So, first half overall, happy to get in at half-time with a goal.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up really well, Callum. I think I almost feel as though Tommy Robson isn't getting enough credit for that pass, by the way, because everyone's talking about the touch that Cammy Bruce took, and it was fantastic to, you know, the touch with his left foot to just set himself up on the right, and the finish with his weaker foot. It was incredible, straight across the goal, brilliant, absolutely fantastic finish. The defender was totally skinned, and he took it so well. But Tommy Robson, the vision, and the actual execution to play that ball through to him, because that could very easily have been picked up by a defender if it had been half a foot either direction. But he just, fantastic, he absolutely nailed that one, and probably one of the better goals that you'll see this season. And as Callum Davidson himself said, probably one of the best goals that Cammy Bruce will ever score with his right foot. I totally agree with you, though, in terms of the aggression. I think it's just, do you know what it is? We had become so accustomed to watching a team that just lacked any real urgency. And I don't think we were necessarily that aggressive with how we pushed the ball forward. We just looked like a normal football team that was trying to win a game. Do you know what I mean? Compared to in the past where we looked as though we were content, as you say, to invite the other teams onto us, and then we'd inevitably chuck the game away one way or another. But we looked as though we were just going for it. We were out there to win that game. We had a game plan, and yes, it didn't get off to the best start, but ultimately we executed it to perfection. That's how you go to the team that's top of the league and win a game of football. And the fact that the heads didn't drop, because that could very easily have happened given how many, you know, how deflating some results and performances have been this season, is a testament already to how much Davidson appears to have got them up for it. That you could, one of the key things for me was just the levels of confidence on Saturday there. That was a team that knew they could win that game, even when they did concede that daft goal early on. Daft, maybe a bit of a stretch, but it was a goal that we probably should have done a wee bit better at defending. But I think overall it's difficult to... Yeah, I agree with you. I think overall Wraith were the better team in the first half, and arguably across the piece they created more, they probably had more of the ball, but that doesn't necessarily mean we didn't deserve the victory, because as I say, we had a game plan, we executed it, and we got the 3 points. And at half-time, we were all talking, and I was turning, I said, we're going to win this game. I said, we're going to win this game. They look ever so slightly rattled now. And most people were going, I'd probably take a draw. And I'd have probably taken a draw at that point too, realistically, because ultimately, you know, it's another game undefeated after such a terrible, terrible, depressing run that we'd been on going into the game against Dunfermline last week. But again, I'd love to know what he said to them at half-time, because we just came out, and the way we were playing... Yes, we rolled our luck a little bit occasionally, but I just think the guys, they knew that they could win that game of football.
Yeah, I mean, they had to know that as well. I mean, Wraith haven't been great shakes at home. Obviously, they are top of the league, and we all know how they've been going about that this season. They've been masters of scoring late goals and scraping wins by one goal. But when you look at their form, I mean, well, this includes their form now, obviously, after playing us. The last five games at home, they've only got one win. And... goals scored 12, goals conceded 12. They're really not, I don't know what it is that's going on when they play at home, but it's quite incredible, especially the amount of goals they're conceding for a team up the top end of the table. But that's clearly, it's clearly something that was the players were aware of, that Callum Davidson would have told them, that you need to go and attack, create these chances. And it certainly sounds like the way that we were set up, and the tweaks that he's already made to the way that we were playing before, you know, certainly helped with creating those chances. Into the second half, that straight away it was that brilliant save that you mentioned, Callum, from Callum Ferry, where I think it was Hamilton again, wasn't it, with the header, and Ferry just, he always manages to pull out these quite incredible diving saves. It's just one of, I mean, probably his best attribute, that he pulls these saves out of absolutely nowhere. It's a fantastic save there, and yeah, you know, you can argue that it probably helped save the game and helped us go on, because I think it may have only been about 5 or so minutes later that Queen's Park chasing down the Wraith defence, just putting them under that pressure, not letting them get the ball out. They kind of fell over it a couple of times, conceded a bit of a cheap corner, and in comes Sean Welsh on the end of a Dom Thomas corner, buries his header into the back of the net, right in front of the Queen's Park fans. As we say, he was just announced that morning by Queen's Park, so he may have only been training for a day, if that. What a way to introduce yourself to the fans as well. But that gives a minute to talk about, you know, his performance just individually on the day. What did you guys make of how he performed for his first game at Queen's Park?
I thought it was fantastic. I thought Welsh was absolutely brilliant. I thought he just looked really calm and composed, and he looked like that sort of experienced head that we've maybe been missing in the middle of the park. And that's not to say that guys like Spong and Turner and whoever else haven't, and Thompson, obviously, where he wasn't playing as a centre-half, haven't been good. They have been, but he just looked like a guy who'd been in that situation hundreds of times before, and not somebody that was still learning how to do it, despite the raw talent that a lot of these guys have. And for me, he was one of the better players on the day. Now, I'm not going to spoil who man of the match was for me, but it was brilliant. And the fact that he scored a header, I mean, he's only a wee guy, what is he, about 5'8", 5'9", or something like that? And you could probably argue that the keeper and the Wraith defence in general could have done a little bit better to close him down, because he did get a fair bit of space. But again, we don't score goals like that very often. It's been a while since we just put a ball into the box and got somebody's head on it, and there you go, bang, there's your goal. That's something that other teams do against us all the time. So it's nice to finally be on the other side of that. And another thing that for me was really good to see, he loved scoring that goal. His celebration was fantastic. This is a guy who you could see real, he just looked as though he was delighted to be here in front of the contributor like that in his first appearance for us. You could see he was as happy as we were, and I'm excited for this signing. I'm just desperate for him to stay fit. Obviously, that's been the main talking point about him coming to the club. But if he can stay fit, that's some bit of business.
Yeah, and let's be realistic, right? Everything that we've heard of about Welsh, and I guess from what we've seen so far, if he was fully fit, he probably wouldn't be at us, because that's it seems right, like yeah. He is a very, very good footballer. And do you know what was just lovely about that goal? That was a training ground move. I know you're saying it was a cross into the box and it was just a header and a goal, but like if you watch it back, you can see they're all running into the positions that they've planned for. And it was the same thing that we see against us time and time again, an in-swinging corner, just get it in the middle and have your players going in some sort of routine and see where you get with it. And it obviously produced the goal. And I totally agree with you. Like the leadership side of it, you could just see if you watched the interview after the game, that he's just got that about him. And as good as his performance was on the pitch, it's hard to, obviously we can't quantify the sort of intangible element of like his influence on the rest of the team. But see, for me, the fact that as the game progressed, we got progressively better. When was the last time that you could say that? Like, we came out after the first half. So obviously we conceded the goal early. We looked a bit shaky in the first half, gave up quite a few chances. And then in the second half, we were very decent. I mean, Ray still had their chances, but I don't want to let go of the fact that Payton had two really, really good opportunities in front of goal. One which he was basically one-on-one with, who was it? It was in goal, Sam McNeil. And he hit it straight in his hands. And then there was another one near the latter end of the game where he has a fantastic shot, which is going to go basically across the keeper and it gets blocked by their defender. So he had a good couple of chances to score as well. So it's not to say that we just scored. It wasn't a smashing grab by any means in my eyes. But I was just thoroughly delighted with Welsh's performance, and I could see I can see why some of the Inverness fans, despite those who were trying to say that this was a great move for them, etc., to get rid of him and free up the wages, I can see why some of them were saying that seems a very odd decision to let his contract go and then allow him to go to what is essentially a relegation rival, because if he wins us a few points this season, then that could be the difference. You just don't know. But that second half was really, really great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was a bit surprised. No, I'm not surprised. Why am I saying that? That's a lie, Callum. I was completely unsurprised to see Wraith throughout the entirety of that game diving and screaming for everything. I know you'll have only seen the highlights, David, but I like to think that we don't comment on, or we don't sort of cry wolf on this thing very often, but my God, man, every time any one of their players was getting breathed on, they were falling to the ground screaming at the referee for a free kick or whatever. It was a bit wild, to be honest, and I actually think it detracted from what they were trying to do in a weird way. I know that they had a couple of chances from free kicks, especially right to the death where they hit the underside of the bar, but they were just so insistent on trying to get fouls that I think it just kind of broke up the flow of play for them a wee bit. I thought that was quite strange, but full credit to the guys for seeing it out, because I don't know about you, I was having a wee think back to the calendar year of 2023, and I can't really think of a win that I enjoyed more than that, if I'm honest. If the Dunfermline game felt like relief, that one felt like actual pure joy to have a good win again.
I totally agree with that. And just to touch on what you were saying about Wraith, I found it very frustrating to watch, to be honest. And I think if I were a Wraith fan, that would annoy me as well, because I would imagine they're probably like that every single week. Unsurprisingly, obviously, Dylan Easton, for me, was the main culprit. I think he's a very talented player, clearly. He's a good championship-level footballer, but his behaviour at times is, I think it's a bit wild, honestly, and I think that would really annoy me on a consistent basis. If you're a team that is dominating games as much as Wraith do, you don't need to rely on that. And I honestly can't remember a team going to the deck as easily and frequently as what they did for the entire 90 minutes on Saturday. I think initially for the first spell, the referee was falling for it, but I think he learned quite quickly as well that was clearly the way they were going to play. The frustrating thing, I suppose, is that he didn't really punish them for it. I don't think I can't recall them getting any yellow cards for that behaviour anyway, but it was pretty incredible. It was pretty wild. And I think, just to kind of touch a little bit more on the Wraith performance, I feel as though the way, see when they went one goal up, I feel as though what they should really have been doing there was going for the jugular, but I think they actually became a little bit more passive in the first half. And I don't know if that was intentional or if it's just because we picked up a little bit. I don't know. And then in the second half, I feel as though Ian Murray was probably a little bit too quick to just chuck all of his attacking options on off the bench. But saying that, that's probably what's got them so many late points this season and so many late goals and wins, including a couple against ourselves. So at the end of the day, he's getting paid money to make those decisions and I'm not. But I don't think there was necessarily any need for him to do that. But at the end of the day, I don't even care because as you say, it was such a satisfying win. It was like, that was the kind of win that we'd been calling for such a long time. Yes, it wasn't a late winner, but you know, the fact that they hit the bar, they had a couple of really good chances. Ferry made some fantastic saves. In a weird way, it did feel like a late winner just because I was convinced at certain points that they were going to equalise, and unfortunately, it didn't happen.
And let's be honest, right? We were due that against Wraith. I agree with you. They went, what is it, Wraith fans seem to refer to it as full Murray ball at the end with the six attackers or whatever it was. Yeah. And they've clearly got a lot of quality in that end of the pitch, so I understand why that's where they're focusing. And you're right, that's probably won them more points than it might have lost them. But and granted, they did have a lot of success with Hamilton up front. I thought every time they got the ball long to him, he basically won everything up front, but they just seemed to not be able to make the most of it from that point. But the guys stood strong in this game, and it was excellent. And what a boost that must be for them to come back off the back of the Dunfermline win, which I think, given the situation that Dunfermline were in that week with the injuries, etc., was almost a bit of a must win. Like, it kind of felt like if you don't win this, when are you going to win? But to go into that and get away with a victory at Starks Park, I mean, that must be such a massive confidence boost. Because it was a big game, and I don't know about you, Enzo. I was a bit surprised. I'm not going to pretend that we have good atmospheres or anything like that at Hampden, but given the volume of fans there, it was a strange atmosphere, I would say, from race support during that game. And I've seen a few of their fans commenting on it as well, that even when they were winning, it was a bit sedate, which I found odd for a team that's essentially competing to get promoted. I don't know if you noticed the same.
I thought, considering, you know, the feel good factor around their club at the minute, where they've obviously, you know, they've spent a lot of money and built a really solid squad that's competing at the top end of the championship, and they're getting big gates. You know, there's 3,500 people at that game on Saturday, and I can only imagine we made up most, about 200 of that. When they scored that early goal, I thought the place would be rocking, but it was fairly somber almost, and you could even hear on the highlights any crowd noise was clearly coming from the away end, which I found a little bit odd. But as you say, we're not really ones to that can criticise too much. Well, from my end. I was just a little bit surprised. I still think a big factor is, honestly, I think Starks Park is just such a weird place to watch football. I mean, I've been quite a few times now over the years, and I just find it bizarre that it must be one of the only places in the world where the home fans are primarily put behind a big, you know, put in a big stand behind the goal. It's just it's a strange setup they've got there.
It's always been a wee bit of a weird layout, Starks Park, hasn't it? Because if you look at that wee stand on the corner that goes up the touchline halfway, and then the other side's the railway line, isn't it? So yeah, there's not really a lot of space there. No, I mean, there's a number of points we can go back over, but just in general, I think that second half, by all accounts, by your guys' reports and other Queen's Park fans was talking to as well, it was an excellent second half. I think you said it, Callum, that we did seem to get better as the game went on. Yeah, Wraith Rovers had their chances, some interesting free kick decision stuff. Some of them are on the highlights as well. I mean, there was that the yellow card for, and it was Gullen in injury time, where it was him and Thompson were booked, but I don't know if you guys noticed the Wraith Rovers had one of these match day alternative camera angle sort of highlights packages, and it was posted on Twitter, which, by the way, just is actually really good content. I would recommend go and find it on their timeline. It's just, they show the Queen's Park goals, they obviously show the race side of it as well, but I always liked that, you know, it's more than just that one camera angle, and again, apparently the Wraith TV coverage is pretty good as well, so fair play to them on that side of things. But on that alternative highlights reel, you noticed that coming together with Ferry and Gullen. I thought it was a little bit naughty for Gullen. He actually does seem to stick his hand right in Ferry's face. I'm not going to say, oh, he's gouging his eyes. I'm not saying anything like that, but I mean, Ferry goes down and holds his face. I actually don't think that was gamesmanship. I think he took a pretty sore one there. So I think Gillen may have been lucky in that regard, but overall, it seems like it was a professional effort by Queen's Park to see out that game, still have the chances that you know we could have gone on and scored again and really take the hold of the game and put it to bed earlier, but wasn't to be. Made us sweat. It was 2-1 Queen's Park on the day. Voting for our man of the match, we're doing it where it's the guys who are at the game. I could not attend, so Calum and Enzo, argue amongst yourselves who is the man of the match. You, Enzo, you said you didn't want to spoil yours.
Yes.
I'm going to go, let me go to Calum first.
Well, hold on, just see before you do it. If I remember correctly, Calum, I think you and I both voted for the same person on the supporters bus, didn't we? Potentially. Well, we'll find out.
Yes, I think we did. So, for me, I don't actually think it's a difficult one. I thought the guys had a genuinely excellent game. Some really, really standout performances from players like Welsh, etc. But it's Calum Ferry again for me. Honestly, the guy, say what you want, but I think if he's not playing that game, I'm not sure that we win it. He made one genuinely like worldy of a save. He was really, really assured in the box, which was perhaps one of the areas that you could criticise him about previously. I thoroughly enjoyed his more demonic gamesmanship side that we've not seen as much. He was getting the Wraith fans riled up and all that sort of stuff. I thought it was an absolutely 10 out of 10 performance from him, and I think he would be my man of the match.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, and it's a bit of a strange one when you win a game of football, because we've obviously, Ferry's been getting it a lot recently, and it's partially because we've not been creating anything at the other end of the park, so we just need to, all we've got to focus on is how he kept us in it for a little bit longer than what, you know, what we might necessarily have been without him. But he was phenomenal. Honestly, he was fantastic. Yeah, he got booked for time wasting at one point, but I actually felt that was a little bit harsh, by the way. See the yellow card that he got for taking his time? I'm not convinced that was quite long enough to warrant a yellow card. Maybe it's because he'd done it a couple of times. I don't know, obviously, what the referee said to him at that point. But he was a real leader at the back. He kept us in that game. The diving save he made to keep that header out down at the bottom, the far his far right corner was unbelievable. He's the best goalkeeper in the league, and he was the best player on the park on Saturday. Absolutely brilliant.
And do you know what I think this game demonstrated in comparison to some of the previous games? Like, I still don't think that we've got fundamentally bad football players in this squad. I think most of these guys are perfectly good enough for this level. It's about having a manager that can actually utilise him properly, and obviously the addition of one or two guys who are senior enough to help them through these games, both from a experience and mentality perspective, because that's still a pretty young team in there. Do you know what I mean? You've got Turner, Mocking, Bruce, I mean, Bannon, Thompson. These are all still very, very young guys that are kicking about in the Championship. And instead of Bruce ending up in a position where he's essentially getting shafted because the team isn't set up to support him, he was able to actually flourish in that game and show us the ability, which he clearly must have, but we've perhaps not seen so far because he's not been enabled to do so. And it's such a nice step change.
Yeah, and what a difference it makes, by the way, waking up on a Monday morning knowing that you've won another 3 points. That's 2 weeks in a row where I've woke up, and it's just, it just puts a smile on your face immediately. And compared to the way that the team has been making me feel since, what was it, the 19th of August up until the Dunfermline game last week, it's night and day. And Saturday was, again, even compared to the Dunfermline, I thought we were poor against Dunfermline, and we came up against a poor side and we managed to just about take advantage of that. And obviously Knighton deserves credit for getting the victory that night, but Saturday's performance there made me really think that this team can still compete at this level. And yes, obviously we're beyond the halfway point, and at this point the goal is just to stay in the division, but I still believe that they can kick on a bit, and I don't think it's you know, out with the realms of possibility that we could move up another two or three places in the league.
Never mind waiting until Monday for a smile on your face. That result and the results elsewhere in the Championship meant that Queen's Park did climb out, albeit on goal difference, or in fact, I think it's actually goals scored.
Goals for,
we climbed out of the relegation playoff spot, so we're off the bottom of the table, and we're not even in ninth place anymore. We are, for the time being, in eighth place. So, you know, straight away, two wins. Again, this league, two wins in a row. We can start climbing up the table if we get another one, which we'll talk about Dunfermline later on. We've got plenty of other things to talk about in the meantime, but if we can get another one, it would be absolutely incredible. We could potentially, if that game goes ahead and we do beat Dunfermline, we could potentially end up in sixth place after three wins in a row, having been bottom of the league. What is mental?
Isn't it genuinely ridiculous that we went 4.5 months without winning a game and we still weren't cut adrift? How is that possible? Like that shouldn't be possible in any other league on the planet. We should really have been 8 to 10 points cut off at the bottom. And I guess it's because it's a small division and obviously you're getting teams you're getting really weird results every single week. But the fact that all it took was two results and suddenly we're thinking, do you know what? You know, this season has the potential to be completely turned on its head. That is wild.
Do you not think it's because the top three teams in the league, United and Wraith, I know that obviously we've just beat them, but if we're talking about trends over the season and Thistle, there is, I think, a bit of a bigger gap than there was in previous seasons between them. So whilst we've still been losing, the big teams still tended to be taking points off of the weaker teams, and that's been the general trajectory. And then you've got that group of like seven who are just sort of fighting between themselves. And obviously, Velman had a horrific period and that's why he's left, but he did start the season with three wins, so they just feel so distant that I almost forget that they happened at this point.
we certainly felt that all season, haven't we? Brilliant. We are, as I say, starting to climb up the table. We'll talk about, as I say, very soon if we think that trend will continue, hopefully this weekend. But let's have a look at the other news that we want to round up, and we will start with results elsewhere for the other Queen's Park teams. So, let's do the QPSFC first. The supporters team, back after a winter break. We're supposed to be back the week before, but the game fell foul to the weather. So they were back on Saturday morning there before the Wraith game, playing Livingston, through in Livingston. Unfortunately, it was a last-minute winner for Livingston. It was a 4-3 victory for them. So QPSFC starting 2024 with a narrow defeat, but we're still in the Scottish Cup, and they do the way that the teams are now. We do a wee couple of groups in the Scottish Cup, and then just play, you know, playoff, blah blah blah. It basically just tries to get as many games as possible in. So we're still fighting for silverware there. I think the league might be a little bit beyond us, but we'll keep fighting. We'll see what happens. Queen's Park Women, well, the league is obviously still very much on for them. They took on Boroughmuir Thistle on Sunday. It was a 1-1 draw, so that was first versus second. Thistle's equaliser came in, it was the 90th minute, according to the QP Women Twitter page. So, yeah, just 1 point there on Sunday. But last night, on Tuesday night, the Scottish Cup third round game that was against Bonnie Rigg Rose, it was obviously supposed to be at Lesser Hampden, but that obviously fell foul to the weather. Unfortunately, wasn't rearranged for Lesser Hampden, so the team have missed out on that chance. Fingers crossed that they can maybe get some league games there into the second half of the season instead, or perhaps if they continue on in the Scottish Cup, because it was a 2-0 win over Bonnie Rigg Rose. Sophie McGoldrick and Darcy Molly getting the goals there. So that sets up a tie with Partick Thistle. Now, that is an away game against Partick Thistle. Given what they've done before, and you know, given it could well be billed as a little bit of a derby, you wonder if maybe you think the teams would be a little bit daft not to get together and maybe even see if Firhill's available. Partick Thistle have done that for the women's team before. They could promote this as a wee Glasgow derby and see how many folk they could get in for it. I think that'd be excellent.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. Thistle have done that for a couple of the women's teams games recently, especially the bigger fixtures, and this they'll obviously. You know, we're playing really well right now, but they're going to be looking at it as an opportunity to progress in the cup against the team in the division below them. Hopefully they do take it a wee bit lightly, because I think Queen's Park Women are more than capable of going there and getting a result. But if they could do that, which in itself would be a bit of an upset overall, and the next round if that did happen to be at home, I think it'd be a real shame if that weren't arranged for Lesser Hamden. And in terms of the Bournemouth Thistle result, I don't think there's anything to be, you know, to be too concerned about there. Bournemouth Thistle have been on a great run of form recently. As you say, they're up to second in the league at this point. It's a shame to concede a late goal the way they did, but you know, you look at that league table, you look at the gap. Don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. Just focus on the next fixture, and I'm sure they'll be back to winning ways shortly.
Aye, absolutely. If you're going into a cup tie against a team in the league above you, this is the time to do it, isn't it? The great run of form. I can't imagine Thistle would be particularly fond of playing a team that's as confident as we are right now. So good chance for an upset, which is something I think we'd all be after.
Yeah, definitely. I think I forgot to mention the actual goal scorer for the league game. So it was Monica Harty got the goal for Queen's Park in the 1-0 draw against Bournemouth Thistle. Apologies for missing you out there, Monica. The SWPL2 league table, that draw drops Bournemouth Thistle down to fourth. So Livingston and Kilmarnock, with their results, have actually jumped back ahead. So it's Bournemouth Thistle in fourth, Livingston third, Kilmarnock back up into second, but that 10-point gap still remains for Queen's Park, flying high at the top of the table there. So, yeah, still a nice big cushion there for them. Last week, the club AGM was held at Lesser Hamden for the club members, and there was obviously some voting done for some positions within the club, and members were also given a bit of an update on the goings-on around the club. Now, there's obviously been a couple of posts on Pine Bovril, one of them, I mean, pat myself on the back, one of them by myself recently, but that was kind of more abusing the club more than anything, so you can go and find that on the Pie and Bottle thread as well and see what you think of my thoughts there. But we were kind of discussing, because of course we've had a few messages and stuff about things that were going on, but we're going to stick with the party line for now, and I think give a hat tip to the PNB poster, Bring Your Own Socks, who did post a bit of an update about the AGM while still sticking with the club's request. The information wasn't made public. I don't really understand that, but as I say, I've mentioned that on PNB. Anyway, so let's just have a quick recap as to some of the main points of the AGM, with hopefully not upsetting anybody at the club. The main points are, obviously, the new club president is Graham Shields, who takes over from David Hunter. And there's two new committee members that were voted in as well. So it's Andy McGlennon and Lynn McCartney, who I believe the club said is the first ever female committee member. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I can't speak for myself, to be perfectly honest, knowing too much about Andy McGlennon, but I'm sure he'll hopefully do a very good job. But Lynn is somebody that I think the three of us are all relatively familiar with, obviously going on supporters buses and before and after games at home as well. I think she has got herself into the committee with the premise of perhaps being a bit of a new broom to maybe sweep out some of... I certainly hope that would be the case for her going forward in the committee. I think that she'll put herself forward very well, and we certainly look forward to not just her, but of course the new, other new committee member, Andy McGlennon, and, well, the other committee members remaining, and of course new club president, see what changes they can bring to Queen's Park, because as we're all aware, we've had plenty to say about things going on at Queen's Park, and it hasn't always been plain sailing recently, has it?
No, it hasn't, and if these new committee members go in and bring some fresh ideas and hopefully encourage a bit more transparency, then I think they'll have done their job ultimately. So it's just a case of whether that will be possible with obviously the folk that are on the committee already. You'd like to think that they recognise that things on, you know, from that perspective haven't been brilliant over the past few years. And that the fans deserve to know more, and the fans ultimately deserve better from the club, given that the time and money that everybody's investing to follow the club all over the country. And, you know, I do mean all over the country, even for home games. So, I wish them all the best, and I hope that they can really make a positive impact.
Yeah, it's very much needed. And you referenced your post on Pie and Bovril, David, where I think you sent a link to the Partick Thistle.
Yeah. announcement. Yeah, their AGM update, yeah.
Yeah, their AGM update, which was incredibly thorough and obviously was issued to all fans. Now, obviously, and again, you mentioned this in your post, that they've got a different structure to ourselves. But if you sort of compare and contrast with the public announcement that was given on our AGM, it was very brief and not very informative. So that's the kind of stuff that I do hope will change, because there has to be a recognition that whilst plenty of fans are members of the club, etc., that's not the position for, I assume, the majority of Queen's Park fans, and there shouldn't be any sort of hierarchical structure in place in terms of knowing what the plans are and what those are in charge are doing with the club. So hopefully that is the kind of thing that will be top of the agenda over the next few months, because it would make such a massive difference if everybody felt like we were connected to those who are in charge of the club, as opposed to it being the other way around.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the other points from the AGM is, say, thank you to Bring Your Own Socks for posting this on Pie and Bottle and giving a little bit of information as well. It is, of course, well, you mentioned that club operations on the football side are in good order. Obviously, I think we're all familiar of the financial arrangements that are in place at the club. I'm sure that will be having a very helpful impact in negating some of the, you know, obviously the money that's been spent behind the scenes on the football side. But there is obviously talk as well that there are still some things that do need to be brought up in terms of the back of house organisation to catch up with the football side. So perhaps acknowledging that some things behind the scenes at the club are not quite as up to standard as where the football side is, you know, with the team now in the second flight or the second tier of Scottish football. So we'll hope to see some improvements there. There's, of course, I'm sure there was on the night, plenty of discussion about the three big departures from the club very recently, Robin Veldman, Marian Buker and Leanne Dempster as well. Took quite communication on the three of them as well. And there was talk about things about the sort of condition of the social club right now, and that is something that a lot of us, and I know I personally, I don't recall mentioning it on here. I'm sure I will have done it at some point, but you know, it's the fact that there's a complete lack of the Queen's Park memorabilia and the Queen's Park social club, which is a little bit pointless. It seems to suggest that something like that might be getting sorted very soon. So a note mentioning as well about the Adidas home kit, which we all agree is absolutely hoaching, but perhaps maybe next season there will be something a little bit more in line with what we're wanting and hoping for in place there. So, say, I'm sure there was plenty of other things discussed on the night. That's really the most that we can talk about. Yeah, say, have a look on Pie and Bottle. There's a few other posters posting a few things as well, but yeah, it would be great to see a kind of an official communication from Queen's Park just acknowledging some of the things that are going on. And I say, I'm not asking, and I'm sure even the members that are at the meeting at the AGM don't even get every single thing that, you know, I'm not asking to be CC'd into every single email, but it would just be nice to get a little bit more than the usual vague updates, wouldn't it?
I mean, yeah, I feel as though we've talked about this so much, haven't we? And I think it's a regular topic of conversation when you're talking about the club to literally anybody. And they obviously know that it needs to get better, so this is the time to do it. Maybe a bit of maybe it's the opportunity to sort of press the reset button, you know, with Leanne Dempster's departure and obviously Buker's departure. Not that I think he was in any way at fault for this side of things, but this is a chance to sort of start again behind the scenes and hopefully make the improvements that ultimately they need to be made.
Yeah, because all that we actually got from the update, the official update from the AGM, not stuff that we've heard via Pie and Bovril, etc., is that the previous decision makers have been replaced by new decision makers, but still no clarity about the decisions that are getting made or how they might get made. So, yeah, there has to be some sort of progress on that, but hopefully we'll be able to talk a wee bit more positively now that there has been a wee bit of a reshuffle and I guess an opportunity for the club to reset.
It would be very helpful indeed to all of us. Say the three of us aren't members, so we are going on word of mouth as well. But yeah, it would be great if everybody could get that update. Fingers crossed something comes from the club, but maybe I won't hold out too much hope on that. So that covers the AGM. Last bit of news would be we're talking about a couple of transfers and transfer rumours. We've already spoke a fair bit about Sean Welsh and the excellent debut that he's had coming in from Inverness Cali Thistle, released by them, and we signed him on an 18-month contract. That did obviously generate a few comments about, you know, this. He has his injury history and it's whether he can stay fit, but the comments online seem to be pretty unanimous that when he is fit, he's quite possibly one of the best midfielders in the Championship. So we certainly have to hope that we see much more of him on the park than off it. And yeah, what a great start to him, to his Queen's career at Raith Rovers. Then, yeah, the only other transfer rumour that we have is, well, the other transfer rumour we have so far is Mackenzie Carse, who I think we're all crying out. I think we're all expecting, and I do think there was actually acknowledgement at the AGM that Callum Davies will be looking at experienced players and getting a bit more, you know, a bit older players into the squad. But Mackenzie Carse is a 19-year-old Celtic B player. Now, maybe he's got a bit of experience. Obviously, he's not got age on his side, but he's played a fair few games. I've got a sort of wee list of stats here. So this season so far, so 18 games played in the Lowland League, and he's scored 7 goals. He's also played 6 games in the UEFA, the Youth Champions League for Celtic. He's actually scored a goal at Lesser Hamden as well. He scored a penalty against Lazio. So he's done something that he's scored at the home stadium, Queen's Park, more than some of our players. Or maybe a real home stadium, I suppose, who knows. But he's also got 11 Scotland under-19 caps as well. So he is a player with a bit of a pedigree there. All the thing is as well, we're looking at the age, 19 years old, and he's also a central midfielder, which feels like, of all the positions we could be crying out for a player, centre mid's probably not one of them.
It's an interesting rumour. So I've done a wee bit of research into this guy as well when the name started floating about. And he's also, by the way, the Celtic B captain down in the Lowland League, which suggests to me that he does have some leadership qualities, which, again, certainly is something that we could use a wee bit more of, not because the guys don't have that, but I think with the inexperience, if you've got these guys that can step up, and that's something that you can do even at 19 years old if you've got the ability and you've got the confidence. So, you know, that's an element of his game that I'd like to see if he does come in. The kind of sticking point for me is that he's a central midfielder, as you say, David. I don't think that's where I would necessarily be prioritising at this point. However, he does seem to be very, very highly rated at Celtic. When you read about him on, you know, Celtic forums, blogs, tweets, whatever else, they think this boy has real, real talent. And I would take somebody who's played at the Lowland League level 100 times out of 100 over somebody who's played down south in that Premier League too, for example, because I feel as though the Lowland League is a tough league physically. You're playing against all these sort of ex-junior players that will chuck you about if you're too lightweight. So he's obviously got that on his side too. I don't know. I'm willing to give him a chance if he comes in, and hopefully, yeah, if this does happen, he proves himself to be a really solid signing. Is it possible as well that him coming in as a central midfielder, is that us accepted that Jack Thompson is just a permanent centre back at this point? I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, that was my main thinking. I guess there's always a funny balancing act in January, isn't there, versus what you think you need versus what's available. Because if an opportunity comes up for a player who might better the overall quality of the squad, then I can see why the club would be tempted by it. And I don't know if you noticed after the Raith game and the interview with Callum Davidson, he was saying that they were looking to add 3 or 4, I think is what he said, which was way more than what I thought we would be adding. So I think we've all talked about how we all believe we need a centre-back and someone else to support Payton, but if there's another couple of spots on top of that are kicking about, because we don't know what departures might be going from our first team squad in the coming weeks anyway as well. There might be some players that are going out on loan to make space for him, for example. So if there is a bit of a like-for-like replacement, if you've got somebody who's maybe a squad player who isn't really making an impact, and you can bring that in with somebody who might not be starting every game perhaps, but is a bit more able when they are actually in the squad, then I can see why they would be tempted by it. So, no, it's certainly an interesting one, and it really didn't fit the profile of anything that I would expect. And it might all be nonsense, frankly, as well. We obviously don't know, but if he did, hopefully it's in the if he did join us, it was hopefully in the context of a couple of other guys in those core positions that I think we all need coming in. I do agree with you, Lorenzo. If we are signing him, I do wonder if it is an indication that Thompson's going to be setting up to be playing at centre-back for the foreseeable future, because I don't know if you'd spotted it, the Dunfermline game, that Charlie Fox was still hobbling about in a boot. So we've obviously not got a lot of a great amount of depth there, and Thompson's arguably been our best centre-back for a while, since he came into that position, really. So I can see why they would be tempted to keep him there.
And in terms of potentially other changes in the squad, you mentioned players potentially on the way out. I don't think we've mentioned at any point that Barry Hepburn is on his way
right.
back to Bayern Munich as well. Yeah, you thought that maybe that was the case, given that he wasn't in the Thistle squad and he wasn't in the squad against Dunfermline. And obviously those are the first three games in January. It kind of indicated that maybe he had no further part to play in the season for Queen's Park. And that was obviously the case. And it looks as well. I saw some comments on Twitter, some posts on Twitter suggesting that he might be on his way to a second division Austrian team on loan for the remainder of the season. I'm not sure how he'll get on there. I don't know. How would you rate Hepburn's time at the club?
I think M's sort of sometimes or not. I think he has talent. I mean, he seems like he can be a good player. He scored a couple of goals for Queen's Park today, or was it just? Well, he obviously scored it at Lesserhampton against Arbroath, that first home win of the season. I can't recall if he scored another one, but on his day he could be a handy player. But it just felt like it wasn't there consistently enough. And then I think when he got that red card against Airdrie, mind the one all game, was that in October? The game that was on BBC Scotland. He came on as a substitute, I'm sure, and then he got sent off before
he did, yeah,
before full time. And it was a bit of a daft red card, and that's being polite about it. And it just felt like ever since that point he wasn't really that involved. You know, a couple of odd appearances here and there, but I don't know, it just felt like the writing was on the wall there for him for a long time. And I think it's probably for the best for all concerned that the loan was ended early. And if he can go to another team in Austria, obviously he'll be back to Germany, and then I suppose jumping across to Austria to play there. If he can get regular game time, who knows what the future holds. But yeah, as I say, at Queen's Park, I think when you look back on it, it probably wasn't one of the better loans that we've had in recent times, anyway, put it that way.
No, it didn't work out, unfortunately. I'd be interested if it was flipped around a bit. Like, see if he joined the club now with Davidson in charge, I'd be interested to see how he would have done. But I think his bridges were burnt, unfortunately. I think he looked okay on the ball. Well, no, he looked good on the ball. He did look good on the ball, but he was very lightweight, and he was in a squad that was struggling. I would say I was surprised that I know that the red card situation was bad, but frankly, got a group of young guys and they've not got much senior support. I think it's not a surprise to see some headless moments in there. I did think he got frozen out a wee bit earlier than kind of what I thought might be the case, because he got properly frozen out, and in my view he didn't really seem to be coming on as a substitute very often, when he seemed like the kind of guy, if he wasn't starting, like a really, really pacey, just get at them winger who might provide some use, but ultimately that wasn't the case. I do think, though, in comparison to some guys like Longstaff, I do think that he has some talent. I think he will eventually do okay, but I do think he needs to bulk up a wee bit. As an interesting one, when you look back on our loan signing since we went pro, because it has really been feast or famine in terms of quality, hasn't it? Because obviously this year we've had Hepburn, we've got McPherson currently, who I think he's all right, but he's not holding his position down right now. Obviously, Mawkin's in the team currently. You think back to the likes of Longstaff, and then you've got the sort of good players. I mean, since a professional era, would you say that any were of a really fantastic standard, other than, I guess, Luca Connell and obviously Mal Boateng, who is the creme de la creme of loan signings?
I mean, those two were really good players, though. Those two were fantastic players.
Like, proper good, yeah.
I liked Connor Shields. I know he kind of split decision with some fans, but I thought Connor Shields gave us something that we were... He was coming in and filling in. You know, he was taking Simon Murray's place in the team, and it was going to be nigh on impossible for just about anybody to come in and do that. But I thought for what he gave us I know it was a period of time where we weren't brilliant, but I always quite liked him. I always quite liked how he put himself about. Obviously didn't score as many as he could have, but I know that's one that may have split a little bit of decision. But aside from that, you're going back years, because I mean, you think of the League One season and the loans that we had there, aside from Luke O'Connell. Connor Smith was good, yeah. Aside from that, though, was it not the January where we signed McBride, Longstaff, and... I mean, Ronan Darcy, I didn't mind, but he just did not get enough game time to really warrant the move at all. But
Longstaff in the squad the whole season? Didn't we sign him in the summer?
Yeah. Oh, was he in the summer? Sorry, right, okay, yeah.
I think if I remember correctly, I think he was in the squad for the whole season. So, yeah, Longstaff was rubbish. McBride was embarrassingly bad. I agree with you regarding Darcy. I think we saw flashes of a decent player with Ronan Darcy, who didn't really get the opportunity to show it. And when he did, you know, he scored that absolute screamer on the horrific Firhill pitch against Aloe, I believe it was, and again, we ended up drawing that game 1-1, didn't we? That was a belter of a goal, and I think we saw flashes of ability from him, but I think that's just the risk you take when you bring in young guys on loan. Do you know what I mean? You don't know what you're going to get, because quite often they are untested at a decent level, and obviously, fortunately, some of them have worked out very, very well, such as Mal Boateng, who I just thought was an exceptional footballer.
Aye. Ronan Darcy, I think he's playing in League Two now for like Crawley or something like that. But I mean, even in and amongst that, you've missed out ones that so like Ewan Henderson, for example.
Terrible.
Awful. Absolutely.
Yeah, we missed out for a
reason.
McPake isn't even playing football right now, as far as I can see.
He's been linked with Hamilton Accies this transfer window. I think
he was linked with them in the summer as well, though.
Yeah, so my understanding is, and what I've heard from a few places, is that McPake is essentially looking for a decent bit more money than what anybody has been offered. Now, don't quote me on this, because I don't know how much truth there is into it. It's all just that talk. But yeah, allegedly McPake has been looking for a bit more money than what any club in Scotland has been willing to offer him at this stage. And I think he should probably just settle for what he can get and try and build his reputation up a wee bit. But, you know, that's a decision for him, I suppose. Ewan Henderson, he's doing really well with Hamilton this year, by the way. He's having a good season with them, despite how rubbish he was for us.
David Boateng, mind him?
Yeah, I do. He wasn't great. And again, yeah, no, he wasn't great.
Aye, because I think he got released, I think, from Palace after...
Yeah, he dropped right down the leagues in England, I'm sure.
Which is incredible, because he was allegedly higher rated at Crystal Palace than Mal was.
Mind we also had, what's his name? The wee guy that didn't play a game, 16-year-old, Dylan Reid.
Yeah, he came off the bench once or twice. I remember he came off the bench against East Fife, and he looked really, really poor. He looked really rubbish that day.
Did he not join Crystal Palace from St Mirren, though? Or am I making that up?
I'm sure he did, yeah. He got a move down. He got a move down south, because we had him for like 2 weeks.
Aye.
Like, we signed him at the end of the January window, and he went back in February. And then, yeah, he got a move down to, I'm sure it was Crystal Palace, I'm sure you're right there. Definitely a Premier League team down south anyway, for a good bit of money, and he's kicking about down there. You thankfully didn't mention, although I'll say his name now, Johnny Kenny.
Johnny Kent. Did we also mention Conor McBride? My goodness, I'm trying to think of all these.
Unfortunately, we did. He's very difficult to forget.
That is an overall pretty bad strike rate, really, isn't it? I don't know how other clubs get on with these loan signings, but I think it really does mean, like, it does demonstrate how you've got to take a lot of these guys at youth level, or even at other clubs at senior level, with a pinch of salt.
That's it. So I think Johnny Kenny. So obviously, look. We got very, very excited when we signed Longstaff, because he was coming from Liverpool, and at that point we probably hadn't been exposed to the potential horrors of young guys coming from that level. But I think overall Johnny Kenny was more disappointing, just because he had a track record of scoring goals in actual senior football. And I don't know how the Irish League compares to the Scottish Championship. I really couldn't tell you that. But I thought he was going to be a good player, and he just looked... He looked horrible, and he looked as though he had a really bad attitude as well. And he was, for me, he was the most disappointing Loney that we've had so far.
Yeah, of the last couple of years, I would probably have to agree with that as well, given the relative hype that he came with. Round this off, we've got to give credit to, of course, Jack Thompson did start as a loan, although he didn't get off to a great start, as we posted on Twitter when it was his 100th appearance last week, wasn't? Oh no, was that against Raith Rovers? That was against Raith Rovers.
Yeah, we
actually forgot to give him a shout out for that. We may as well do that right now then. Talk about the fact that when he joined Queen's Park on loan, it was a wee bit hit and miss. He had some flashes, but for the most part was just like, okay, fine. But then he was made permanent signing, halfway through that season and given a decent contract. But ever since then, he's just kicked on. And yeah, there we go. 100 appearances against Raith Rovers. And obviously, you guys voted Callum Ferry as your man of the match, and it seemed quite unanimous. But if we're looking maybe this across the season as a whole, Jack Thompson's probably got to have, I'm not going to say one hand on the trophy. There's maybe a couple of guys that could argue that. But what a player he's developed into at Queen's Park, and he's incredibly vital to anything we're going to do going forward.
I mean, I think you could probably argue that he's our most important player.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, because he's like genuinely versatile in terms of being a top performing player in a couple of core positions. And it's also just like it's really good to see such a massive development from a Queen's player over that course of time, because there was a period of time where I think he did look like he was struggling a wee bit, but the way that he's improved his game over the last couple of years has been genuinely fantastic. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if, in fact, was there not a rumour of an offer floating around or somebody in
Carlisle United, who apparently have a wee bit of money behind them in League One.
A wee bit being a lot of money floating about. But yeah, I think he'll go on to have a really, really good career. So I think it will be a case of enjoying whilst he's here.
Yeah, no, he's been brilliant so far at Queen's Park. I think he's one of my favourite players to watch right now. I do just love the way he goes about and puts himself around a football park. So it's great to see him. Yeah, brilliant. 100 games for Queen's Park, and I definitely hope for at least 100 more. I don't want to just enjoy him while he's here and wave him off. I want to see him. He could if he wanted to. He could be here for a long time, and I would certainly hope with the way that the club's obviously trying to position itself, he could be the one that could perhaps lead us to who knows what. But I think that covers just about everything. I will just raise, in the last few hours or so, there's been not so much a rumour, but just kind of a thought posted on the big Queen's Park thread on Brian Bovril, with Dundee signing Curtis Main from St Mirren. Somebody's wondering if Callum Davidson might try and bring in Zach Rudden, the striker, on loan or perhaps permanent, who knows, from Dundee, because he's a player that Callum Davidson went after before and signed when he was at St Johnstone. What would you make of a player like Zach Rudden coming in?
Right. I'd take him. Yeah, you would take him. But before we start, I don't know if you know this or if you have looked this up here, because I randomly was on his Wikipedia page last week. How old do you think he is?
I honestly, I know the answer to this. I don't know if you do, David, right? But see, when I saw this, I was genuinely shocked, because he feels as though he's the kind of player that's been floating about 10 years or something like that. And that is clearly not the case.
Well, I was going to say, it feels like one of those names that I've been hearing for a long time. I'm terrible with knowing like players' ages and stuff like that at the best of times anyway. I don't know, like
23.
Is he actually
23?
He had a rough paper round, did he not?
I know. I was the same. But I'd absolutely take him. No questions asked.
I think he scored last season. He probably scored 6 or 7 goals for Dundee. And I think he's just. I think him and Peyton would probably work really well together. You know, he can do a lot of the work again, and Peyton can bang them in. I think it'd be a really good option. I think I'd still prefer Stevie May if there were any chance of that happening. But I think I'd take either of them, because we do need another striker.
Yeah, up front's definitely that position that we think has to be top of the list for another player coming in. A bit of support. You're not going to replace Rudy Payton. You can't. He's one of the top goal scorers in the league. But yeah, he definitely needs a bit of help up there, or perhaps a player that can come in and give him a wee break every now and then, because Izzy agrees with that as well there, clearly. He definitely needs a wee break every now and then. But that could well be one to keep an eye on. You never know what will come of that there. I think, does that cover just about everything now? I think we've talked in all the wee half rumours and even the players going out rumour that I wasn't wanting to bring up. But I think that will do us. Let's preview this game against Dunfermline this Saturday. Away to Dunfermline, as I say, but will it be away to Dunfermline? Because last week they had to have their home game against Airdrie postponed. They claimed it was due to an issue with their undersoil heating, and I think they were claiming it was like a burst water pipe as well, weren't they? They did post only a couple of pictures of the park. It looks like there is a hole in or a big divot in the park somewhere, something to do with one of these pipes. And it did look like there was a bit of the pitch that was pretty well drowned, but it was a little bit surprising. And I don't know, are you guys buying into the conspiracy theory that the Airdrie fans were putting out that Dunfermline didn't want to play them because, well, as we know, they are ravaged with injuries, and I think they were in an even worse place after losing to us at Hampden the week before?
Yeah, I think there was definitely some sort of intent behind that, and also fair play to them, because at the end of the day, listen, you don't need to have undersoil heating at this level, so you can't penalise a club when it breaks or when they choose not to use it, because it's an expensive thing to run. I mean, I'd be frustrated in that situation if I were an Airdrie fan, which fortunately I'm not, but you just have to say fair play. But to be fair, I did see a couple of pictures of the pitch, and it doesn't look in great condition. They have had trouble with it over the past couple of years. It's not the first time. And with the weather being as cold as it has been all this week, I can't see this game being on.
Yeah, I really hope it is. But I mean, it is meant to, the temperatures are meant to go up sort of as of Friday, and Saturday it's meant to be a sort of hefty 5 to 8 degrees, as my weather app's telling me in Dunfermline. So
is that during the day? What's it like at night?
Well, Friday night's got lows of 3 to 6. So, I mean, I don't see why it's that drastic. Like, if it was any other week, you would kind of be hoping that it was going to be on. But Dunfermline fans seem to be pretty certain that there's not a chance of it, which would, I don't know. Well, it's probably a shame, because they're objectively, I'd assume, in a worse position than we are going to be. I was going to say, oh, well, it might be beneficial for us if we get a few more signings and etc. But off the back of two wins and Dunfermline having a bunch of injured players, you're still going to be relatively confident going into that game. So,
I mean, I think it says a lot. I mean, I won't be at the game because I made plans when I thought this was going to be a free weekend. And I would still be disappointed if this was called off, because I think it's a good opportunity for us to make it 3 in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100% is. I'm not going to make any plans just yet in case it is called off. I do believe that it will be off. I've been checking the Dunfermline Twitter like all week, and they've not posted anything about the pitch at all. They've not given any kind of update themselves to their fans or for anything that we can kind of have a wee peek at either. They did post their match preview earlier on today, which contains a fair bit of stats and stuff, if you're into that kind of thing as well. But nothing on the pitch, so I suppose we'll treat it as the game's going ahead for podcast purposes. So in terms of a starting lineup, well, Enzo, if you're not going to be there, why don't you give us what your thoughts are first? Would you be making any changes to that starting 11? Are you happy enough with what you've seen against Raith Rovers? I'm sure you will have been. Does it make you want to make any changes? Are you happy to stick with it?
Do you know what's just dawned on me? For the first time in months, I can't pick out anybody who had a bad game against Raith. And that is quite something. I genuinely, because I think every single week, even where we've maybe got all right results, for example, when we drew with Thistle at Hampden, or when we did eventually beat Dunfermline, you could still pick out performances that you probably weren't that happy with. But I don't think anybody stands out as having not performed against Raith. So I'd be inclined to play the same starting 11 and then just see how it goes from there. I don't necessarily know if that's what Davidson will do, given that he's still getting to know his players and maybe his mind will have been changed on one or two things in training this week, and maybe he'll just want to try something else. I don't know. But for me, I would just leave it as is.
Al, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, obviously, because when you come off the back of a win like that against Wraith, then I think obviously your instinct is stick with the exact same team. But I do still think that he'll have some decisions to make. I thought Mawkin looked good, but I think he is still a wee bit naive defensively. He did get his into bother at one point with a sort of pretty wild pass back into the centre of our defence. And I personally, from what I've seen of McPherson, I still think he's a decent player. So I think he will be competing with Mawkin. It'll be interesting to see what Davidson does decision-wise with him. Still curious about McKinstry. He came on for a sort of last-minute time-wasting cameo at the end of that game. Didn't seem to get much game time. And then Jack Spong, I think he came on for the last 15 minutes. So I still think that Davidson's got some decisions to make. I don't think it's as clear-cut, but I think after that kind of result, I think you walk out with the exact same team, unless something happens in the next couple of days where we get another signing that is clearly going to be a first team regular. I think the guys deserve that after such a long period of pretty horrendous performances. I think it would be harsh to replace someone who was part of a team which, as you correctly said, Enzo, nobody really had a bad game. Everyone did very well.
I think that may potentially influence his decision is going into the game at Starks Park, the expectation was that we were probably going to be put under a lot of pressure. Maybe Davidson will feel going to a depleted Dunfermline team that we might be on the front foot a little bit more, and that may justify potentially starting someone like McKinstry or potentially starting Ben McPherson, because he is, Mawkin's good going forward, but you never know. It just depends on what he's seen from them. So that could be a factor. I don't think it will be.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult to justify dropping anybody from the lineup against Wraith Rovers. You know, you go to the team that's top of the league and, you know, put in that performance that every single one of them did. It'll take something special from somebody in training to work their way into that starting lineup this week. So yeah, same lineup, same team. Fingers crossed, same result. Shall we do our match predictions then? Callum, I say same result. Give me my points. Give me my good news.
Yes, your time has come, David. After me getting the hefty 5 points against Dunfermline, you have got a correct score. You do not get 5 points for that, though, because you did not get the correct first goal scorer, because I don't think realistically any of us were expecting Bruce to get that. But it gets you 3 points, so 1 point for Enzo and I getting the correct team winning. You get the 3 points for the correct score, so that means that you have closed the gap. So, David, you are now on 15 points, I'm on 17, and Enzo, you are on 19. So you've got the honour, David.
Well, that's fine. I'll take closing the gap. If this game goes ahead, it is going to be 2-0 Queen's Park.
I think that's a good shout, yeah, because yeah, he looked a bit toothless.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. I mean, obviously they got that goal late on with, what's his name, Summers, but that goal shouldn't really have gone in anyway. But yeah, 2-0 Queen's Park, and it will be Peyton and... Peyton and Thompson.
All right, cool. I'm going to go for 3-1, but like an easy 3-1. I will have Thomas, Peyton and Turner.
Oh, you took my score and Callum, you took my first goal scorer. So that's brilliant. So I'm going to have to go with 3-0 Queens. And I have no idea who I want to give the goals to. 3-0 Queens. Oh dear. Jack Turner, first goal scorer, and Rory Payton and Dom Thomas.
All right, cool.
All right, there we go. So, yeah, this weekend, with it being the Scottish Cup, there's only one other game in the Championship. In fact, actually, it's not even on the weekend. I think that's into the beginning of next week, where you've got Ayr taking on Arbroath. That's actually scheduled for next Tuesday. So only two championship games on this weekend. I'll still class that as the weekend. And then obviously the week after we'll go into a full card. But we'll, of course, talk about that on next week's episode. Until then, Callum and Enzo, it's been a pleasure as always. Continue to find us on Twitter at Spiders Talk Pod, and you'll find us on Pie and Bovril and all the threads related to Queen's Park. Thank you for coming back, listening to us again this week, and we will see you all again next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. The
play for the sake of the game. Play for the sake of the game.